Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Joining us on the line is Gerald Steinberg. He's a political scientist and a founder of NGO Monitor. Very, very good morning to you. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us. How are you?
Good morning. Well, it's a warm day in Jerusalem, and it's likely to get hotter as political events increase. Today is what on the Jewish calendar is marked as Jerusalem Day. It's been it's the day in which the during the 67 war in which Jerusalem was reunited, was recaptured by the Israeli military forces in 67, and it is marked by a lot of celebrations on the Jewish side and a lot of protests and violence on the Palestinian side every year. This year is likely to be even more violent for some of the reasons that you just explained.
So in fact, it has become increasingly so, and there's always tension around this time of year. To some extent, as frustrating as it might be, the situation around the Sheikh Jarrah residency eviction court hearing, he couldn't have come at a worse time.
That's important. I agree with you, and it's important to understand that this is a private lawsuit that has been going on for many, many years on the ownership. This was not a legal proceedings that was initiated by the state in any way or by the Israeli government. But it obviously has broad political implications. You talked about the fact that what is called by Palestinians Sheikh Jarrah, what is known from the Israeli side as the Shimon HaTzadik area of Jerusalem, was largely populated by Jews. It was owned and populated by Jews until 1948. In 1948, there was what is referred to as an ethnic cleansing. Every single Jew was evicted. Those that were not killed were evicted from their houses, from the schools, from the synagogues in those parts of Jerusalem. And there's been a legal struggle that has been going on essentially since shortly after the 67 war for some of these properties by the heirs or those organizations that had claimed to the land before 1948 to restate that. It captured the world's attention because there's a concentrated political campaign led by non-governmental organizations, NGOs. The most important, the most visible, the most powerful one is an organization called Al-Haq, which is a Palestinian organization that has very strong roots and lots of funding from European governments, precisely in order to run these kinds of political campaigns. And they have twisted the history in a very effective way, so that you see the international media parroting their distorted version. I saw today in the New York Times as an example that the term eviction is used, the term that these are Palestinians who are being victimized. We hear that same tale since we've heard since 1948. It's not about the fact that the Jews were evicted in 1948 and want to be able to reclaim the land, and that the Palestinians who've been living there illegally have not even bothered to pay rent, even though they recognized in an earlier court proceedings of the 1980s that in fact the land had been confiscated, stolen from the Jewish owners. So this is a very complicated set of issues. And if you have groups like Al-Haq using millions of euros and dollars and pounds to inflame an already tense situation, that's what you're going to get.
How do you fight this? Because it is, I was telling our listeners earlier, yesterday I was online on Twitter, and there was a lot going on here in South Africa. The South African government notoriously blinded by the real situation. They are blind to the real situation. Our Department of International Affairs, the political arm, tweeted about this extensively yesterday. Of course, didn't mention the girls that were murdered either. But there's I debated it with myself. Should I get involved? Shouldn't I? And I actually didn't have the energy yesterday to deal with what I would have had to deal with had I done that. I do feel like a bit guilty about it, because I can do it and I have the words to do it and I have the ability to do it. But I just didn't have. And part of me thought, well, I'm not going to change it. I'm not going to make a difference. And at the end of the day, does it actually make a difference if somebody has chosen to be blind to the real situation? I'm never going to give them sight. Does it make a difference if I do or if I fight it or not? And I mean, it's obviously a question you've answered because for yourself, because this is what you do every day. But it's really quite a difficult scenario given the tsunami of hate and non-factual information that comes our way.
When I started doing this type of counter to these narratives through, and I focused specifically on the issue of NGOs, because you're right, there are so many out there, and it can be very, very depressing that you constantly find these battles, and it's very difficult to have a victory. So I picked one area which was not a focus of much attention, and I thought needed to be addressed, and that was with the non-governmental organizations. And I think there, if you concentrate, and if a number of different organizations, individuals are also involved in the same battles, it is possible to create at least enough doubt that will force these organizations to become a little less, or sometimes even in strongly less strident in their blatant attacks and their lies, the combination of things. So that, for instance, last week, as you probably know, an organization called Human Rights Watch issued a 200 and something page report in which they used the word apartheid 200 times. And that had very broad echoing throughout in the media and among other places. At the same time, though, because organizations like NGO Monitor, and I think we did a good job in this case, also spread the word, pointed out the pathologies of using the terrible experience of South African apartheid and applying it to a conflict, an ongoing conflict, which has nothing, no connection whatsoever to the type of racism and hatred that characterized apartheid. It really cheapens and the experience in South Africa. And what the heads of Human Rights Watch were forced to say on the BBC and many other media outlets was, well, we didn't mean to compare Israel to South Africa. We're using a different form of apartheid, a different definition of apartheid.
Yeah, they kind of changed it to apartheid-like. Which I don't know if it's like a light spear. Yeah, I don't know what
they're saying to them. Well, why did you use the term 200 times in your report if that's not what you meant? And so you do see some chipping away of the narrative, the way in which they frame things. And that's not a minor issue. Over years, I think it does diminish the ability of these organizations to carry on these kinds of campaigns, but you do have to have a lot of either faith or optimism to be able to see those changes coming. Mm. It's a difficult battle.
I mean, I'm just looking on Twitter now, Radio Islam reporting and showing footage, apparently live footage, Al-Aqsa under attack, a torrent of firing into the mosque, and you see people, of course, running, and there's firing. You can't see who's doing any firing, of course, and when you look at that, and then you look at some of the Israeli networks, you see the attacks from the Palestinian worshippers, from the Muslim worshippers who are attacking. It's just incredible, because you can take any footage and tell a story that you want to tell, and unfortunately what suffers in the end is truth, and people lose lives over this type of thing. It's almost like there's no real responsibility.
I'm an academic, at least that's what I've been doing for most of my life on a professional basis. And as an academic, we tend to try to take a step back and look at the process. This is a soft power warfare. It's manipulation. I think that's exactly what you said. It's something that there is. We have to learn and be better. We, in terms of the Israeli government, I'm not part of that, but I do think the Israeli government and other actors, that are powerful actors that are supportive of Israel, have to get better at understanding how the process works. You started the discussion by talking about the Shimon HaTzadik or Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. First of all, the language is important, and we don't often pay attention. We allow the other side to define the language. I got a question the other day about the second intifada, which is when buses were being blown up. That's not language I would ever use. This was Arafat's war. We have to be better at coining the language, at playing the game, at using the strategy that is necessary in these kinds of conflicts. I think the Israeli government, the Attorney General, did the right thing by going to the court yesterday, the Supreme Court, and asking, even though the government's not a party to the case, asking that the court delay a ruling for 30 days on the properties that we're talking about in order not to inflame an already inflamed situation. Now, in terms of justice, the owners may be upset about that, but in terms of the bigger issues that are at stake, let's lower the flames a bit. If they had done that a month ago, we would not have been, if they would have realized that this whole court process was going to take place at the end of Ramadan, at the same time as Jerusalem Day, as when so many other things were happening, they might have said, this is not a good time to have this issue become a central focus of media attention. Let's wait a while. And it won't make much difference if it's already, they've been waiting now for since 1948, if they wait another month or 2 months to adjudicate this issue. Those are the types of strategic decisions that need to be made more consciously. It's how something is played and twisted and manipulated in the media that determines a lot of how the impacts are portrayed.
Gerald Steinberg, political analyst and founder of NGI Monitor, thank you for bringing us that perspective this morning. It is 8:46. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. I'd love you to weigh in on the situation. Israel, although the government is not party to this dispute, which is a one that is between two parties. So what's happened here is that there's claimants to the property. Those that are living there are saying no, it is theirs. The others are saying it is theirs. It is very clear, according to the courts, that it does not belong to the Palestinians who are living there. They have been allowed to continue doing so, provided they pay rent. They have not paid rent, and this is now a court case around eviction. The question is, should this have been taking place right now? The Israeli government has gone to the courts and asked them to delay it for 30 days. What is your thought on that? Should the Israeli government have done that? Should it just continue as is and deal with the consequences there?